Welcome, viewers and listeners, to another edition of CHP Talks. We're here with a repeat guest and very pleased to have with us again Nadine Ness from Saskatchewan. Nadine, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm just going to give a bit of an introduction for those who may not know or had not seen any of our previous interviews with Nadine. Nadine Ness is the married mother of four. She, her husband, and children live in the wonderful province of Saskatchewan. She is a vineyard owner, a former RCMP officer, a former atheist, and a former lefty, she says. She is also the founder and president of Unified Grassroots, a nonprofit organization that began in a time of COVID mandates and is focused on the fight against division, hate, discrimination, and coercion. And she is a citizen journalist. We need more of those today. We need every citizen to be a bit of a journalist and be paying attention to what's going on in the country and sharing the truth with their neighbors. So Nadine has recently recorded an important video presentation regarding pedophilia, child sex trafficking, and grooming. In this and a series of planned videos that she's going to be producing, she is exposing the dark side of some of the organizations involved in child grooming. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I just recently saw the video that the first of this series that she has produced. And it's very powerful, impactful, full of information, some of it chilling information, but things that we need to know as citizens of Canada. So Nadine, thanks for doing that. And again, thanks for joining us today. And I don't know where you want to start in this conversation.
It doesn't really matter. The reason that I made the video, we know there's things are changing very quickly in our schools, and a lot of us parents are getting really concerned. And I have a different view, mindset on everything that's happening just because of my past experience. So I wasn't just a former RCMP officer. I was also trained to profile child sex offenders. So that includes pedophiles and also child sex offenders that offend that aren't necessarily attracted. I'll get more in details with that in future episodes of videos that explains the difference between the two. But my video was more specifically to pedophilia and pedophilia activism. So I know the history of pedophilia and how they have attempted to normalize it into society. We kind of were warned that this was coming. And I remember in the classroom, the guy who trained us said, I said, so how do you think they're going to do it? And he suspected that the letter P was going to be added to the alphabet. And it's kind of interesting. At the time, this would have been in 2016, I believe, that I was trained to profile sex offenders. And I was thinking, there's no way that'll happen. There's no way that it'll get normalized or that will allow any bit of headway as a society. And just to give you an indication on how far it's gone, the P has officially been added to the alphabet.
Really?
In the U of R, on their website, they have the P added, but they say it stands for pansexual.
Okay.
So yeah. Knowing everything we know, that they still felt it was appropriate to add that. So you're going to start seeing that move forward. It's funny that Saskatchewan is the first province where we're actually noticing that boldly on the U of R website. And I did tweet about it. But just to say, that's just one simple thing. But the normalizing of pedophilia goes back, like the activism to do it goes back since the beginning of what is known as the Pride movement, LGBTQ movement. So pedophiles, so I'll talk about NAMBLA. So NAMBLA is the North American Man-Boy Love Association. And it's an organization that was for pro-pederasty or pedophilia, and they did a lot of activism. So some of the things that they fought for is the sexual liberation of all sexual deviancy, also the sexual liberation of youth, and they wanted to lower the age of consent. They wanted to make it so that a child could consent to sexual relationship with adults as long as it wasn't forced. So they considered a child being able to consent. So when you look at all the list of their goals, their mission, and the action plan, you start noticing that they've actually implemented a lot of those in society. We're seeing it a lot currently. And it's kind of intertwined with the gender ideology. And people are going to ask, how is that even possible? It's two different things. However, the same mindset that goes behind the gender ideology is the same mindset that NAMBLA has, that a child can choose for themselves what to do with their body. That's like a clear line that was in NAMBLA. Mm-hmm. And then when you dig even further deep into the gender ideology, that comes from queer theory. And the queer theory itself is founded in normalizing all sexual activity, including pedophilia. So if you go look at, and I touched a little bit in that video, but I'm going to be digging deep into it in two episodes from now, where if you look at the founding documents of queer theory, it's 50% pro-pedophilia. You can't have queer theory being acknowledged and pushed forward without pedophilia not being acknowledged. The two go hand in hand. And it's funny to see some of the LGBTQ group saying, no, that's not what we're pushing. But the mindset behind it is the exact same. And once you start digging, it's really frightening to see, just for example, the godfather of queer theory, known as the godfather, was Foucault. I can't remember his first name, but he himself was a pedophile, as well as every other founding fathers or godfathers of queer theory. They all were either pedophiles or allies to pedophiles. Not a single one has ever denounced it. So when you see that being the basis for some of the stuff that's coming forward and moving into our schools, it's very, very frightening. Can you hear the sound of the kids in the background?
No,
or
I
is
can't.
It okay? Okay, I, this mic is good then. But
that's
yeah.
Good.
So
when you a couple of things, I just wanted to interject. One is that in the video that you just put out, which is very well put together, by the way, you mentioned that you were, as a child, you were a victim of child abuse, mm-hmm. of grooming. You sort of experienced that, and you actually had to go and report, testify in a police station at the age of 10. So that is kind of must be one of the driving forces behind your concern about this. You experienced it as a victim, and now you are seeking, as a mother and as a citizen, to protect other children from having to endure that kind of assault on their independence, their innocence, mm-hmm. and the purity of their hearts as young children.
I know the kind of damage that child sexual abuse can do to a person, and not only just through my own personal experience myself as a survivor. I say survivor because I don't like using the term victim, because I did move beyond it and move past it. But, and I'll also add, like my abuser was a part of a church and was an elder in the church. Yeah. And what came after that is actually what led me to being atheist for most of my life. The behavior of the church, the behavior of him, just the lack of accountability, just the brushing under the rug. And yeah, and with that also came the point where I really devalued sexuality or sex, because as a victim, if you put a high value on it to survive, it makes what happened even worse. So you'll notice a lot of victims of sexual abuse will turn to drugs, alcohol, prostitution. For example, most of the women you see in the porn industry, they're all victims of child sexual abuse, almost all of them. And if not victims of child sexual abuse, they're either human traffic. It's very rare that you see someone going into that industry that haven't been victimized themselves. And this is a topic that I'll be addressing in my second video, the sexual sin in the church, pornography, as well as child sexual abuse, and how sometimes not the church, and I say the church because it's easy to focus who I'm addressing it to believers, but it's not the church that's a problem. It's individuals in the church. Now, where the church could be better is at potentially how they deal with when it comes forward, how they can move forward with the victims as well as the offender. I'm not saying kick them out of the church and have them not be involved in anything. There needs to be a way that the church deals with that sexual sin, gets that person to move past it, gets them to hold them accountable and not just move them to a different parish or a different area. So yeah, there's a lot to unpack, but not only do I know what it's like as a child being sexually abused or exposed to sexual material or anything at an early age, I also, so I can pull from that from my own personal experience, but I also know long-term what it does to society because I lived it myself. Yeah. It caused me to not have Christ for I don't know how many years. So that would have been probably close to 25 years.
Wow.
So
you came back from that long experience in the dry valleys of atheism. And I spent the first part of my life in that as well. I was not raised a Christian. Christ found me in my early 20s. But anyway, that you were able to come back out. Some people could just become bitter and resentful and never seek to understand and to know and understand God who made us mm-hmm. and loves us, right?
Yeah. I see it this way. It's not God that let me down. It's not Jesus that let me down. It's humans. And I recognize all of our brokenness. I recognize my own brokenness. I'm not sitting here saying I'm better than any of these people. In God's eyes, I'm just as much of a sinner, but we've been saved by Jesus and by the blood of the Christ. And I recognize that. That's why I can walk unashamed, even knowing I'm a sinner and even knowing that I have my own struggles. And I hope that anyone who's listening doesn't see this as I'm coming from a place of high and mighty. I'm just as equal as every other sinner in the church. But at the same time, I'm pleading with the body because we're supposed to reflect Christ. We're supposed to be the people that people look up to and say, I want that.
Right.
And I want to motivate and encourage the church to become that, to be that light. And I've noticed just in the last, like even we were talking about that in our board, like where's the church? Like I'm making videos, I'm fighting, I'm speaking up against this stuff coming to the schools, but where's the church? Why isn't the church being so loud?
No.
And the leaders in the church, not just the church, the leaders in the church, why aren't they standing up to this?
Well, raises another question, and that is, like you mentioned about young people are being, they're now being described as that they are able to give consent, the minors, mm-hmm. about mature minors. And that kind of overlaps into both the church and the government in the recent, mm-hmm. COVID, kind of dictatorship that we went into, the imposed mandates and all those things. And they said to kids, you know, you're able to give consent. You don't need your parents. Your parents don't have to agree with you. You can do whatever. And so they're doing that. The schools and, you know, basically government through the institution of public education is telling kids you can be, you know, you're smart. You can do whatever you want. You don't even have to tell your parents in terms of sexuality. If you want the vaccine, go ahead and get it. In fact, you should get it, never mind what your parents say. And now they're even talking about consent to have medical assistance in dying for what they call mature minors. My question is, who are the mature people who are deciding who are the mature minors, right? Who are the people that are, that take it upon themselves to, you know, to decide for these children when they're mature enough to make those decisions for themselves? I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt you though.
No, no, it's true. We're falling. And it's funny because I tend to do it too, but it's so easy to blame the government for bringing this in. But we have to recognize that government is downstream from society too.
Right.
So we as a society need to step up and say this isn't okay and demand that our government authorities represent us, the people. Now I won't get into conspiracies, but because they're not conspiracy, there's true. There is outside influence that are moving the pendulum of the government that we never used to have before, at least right. Not to the extent we do now.
Yeah.
And then we also have the media that seem to really move the pendulum. Like it's gotten to the point government listens more to the media and what the media is going to attack and what they won't in order to make decisions instead of listening to the people. And we noticed that during COVID, like our province of Saskatchewan was a prime example where media was really controlling the narrative and controlling the direction of the government. They were kind of forced in one direction until we had an organization that grew out of nowhere that countered the media. And we were quite effective at changing public opinion and moving that narrative. I don't think it's something that they saw coming. And it's probably why they tried to attack me and discredit me and demonize me as much as they could, because they knew the power that the people have once they have a voice.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think this is another avenue where we're noticing so much advancement with this ideology into our school, because anyone who spoke out has been silent or stopped from coming in to do a school presentation. The media won't publish the stories. They won't publish the stories of detransition. They won't publish the story of the win that just happened in BC for that father there at the Court of Appeal. They won't talk about anything that's coming from, I say, the side of common sense. It's just whatever pushes that woke ideology now. Where we're working really hard is, as an organization, is equipping parents with how do you have your voice heard? How do you do it in a respectful, compassionate, loving manner while still stating the facts, while still showing the type of damage that this is doing to society and our children? So I think we need more voices coming forward on the public square, not just at a school board. We need loud voices all over. We need media. There's people in the media that know what's happening is wrong, and they're so afraid of saying anything. And they're so afraid of going again. It's the same with COVID. We just need that same boldness to come forward. So,
well, the human rights commissions and inquiries and panels have been empowered to have, you know, almost the, you know, the same strength as a law enforcement agency and the court rolled into one, right? And they make their accusations, often baseless accusations about people's motives and whatever, for people just speaking up. I know our friend Päivi Räsänen in Finland is a member of parliament there, and she goes to trial at the end of this month because she posted a Bible verse regarding, in the beginning, he made them male and female. And so in Finland, they're considering that a crime. And yet she was just reelected by the people, but the public prosecutor is wanting to make an example of her. And we're seeing that in this country in different ways. Barry Neufeld was a great school trustee in Chilliwack, but the media and the education kind of structures, the education mafia, I guess, and education minister in their left-wing British Columbia government, vilify people just for speaking the truth. So
I think it's such a difficult thing to speak about, and any truth has a counter narrative that they've made up that they use to attack, right? You're noticing that a lot now. Whether they like it or not, the evidence is going to come out. You're starting to see that in the UK, like a lot, because the UK is kind of advanced more than we are when it comes to the gender stuff. They were doing stuff way sooner. So you're starting to see that come back. So I'm hoping that that's going to make its way here. But if we can equip the parents with the info to push back. For example, I released a story, this would have been a few weeks ago, about it was an audio between a parent and a school principal. They were having a meeting, and the school principal in the audio admits that the reason they're pushing the gender stuff a lot is because 32% of the kids between grade 7 and 12 identify as LGBTQ. But it's funny because when he was saying that, he was using it to justify their actions, not even recognizing that there's a little bit something wrong with that scenario or that data. And I'm not saying there's a certain limit as to how many children should identify as LGBTQ, but when you go from 4%, which used to be, and so 4% used to be LGBTQ, and then 0.4 something, I tweeted it, I don't know it off the top, is 0 point something identify as transgender, or, and now you have this crazy number that's coming forward. We have to recognize that something is happening that's not necessarily based in science or in nature, and what is causing it. Because if we, and I do believe it's increasing risk for children, because if they say that being transgender or LGBTQ increases your risk of suicide, which they like to always say, unless you transgender them or transition them, you're going to have a dead child. That's that key line that they often use to push the parents to go that route. And nobody wants a dead child. So they're like, okay, whatever we need to do. But just that whole lie is based on the fact that they say that there's a higher risk of suicide if you're identifying as LGBTQ. Now, if that's the case, and we've gone from 4% to 32%, if we go based on the survey that was done in that, so that 32% was based on a survey done in the school. So if we go based on that, rough math here, 32 divided by 4, that means 8 times the rate of kids now are at high risk of suicide. When you consider that.
Yeah. And suicide used to be almost non-existent when I was in school. When so-called, as they would say, oh, everyone was repressed back then. Now that they've, cut all the chains and everyone is free as they say, free to do what they want, with whom they want, whenever they want, whatever age they want. And yet now suicide has actually climbed, including a much higher rate of suicide for those who have transition, those who have undergone surgery tremendously.
Yeah.
So that's, it's a lie, and the media has participated in that lie, and the schools have participated in it as well.
It's really, there's a lot of pressure being placed into the schools. Like, that's what I uncovered when I was doing some digging. They know they can't get this in through the government because there's going to be too much pushback on parents. So what they're doing it through the school administration, through the teachers' unions, and going directly to the teachers to teach them on and provide free resources to bring in this new. And what I'm talking about is not just gender ideology. There is a plan for revamping the sexual education curriculum or program. The curriculum is very vague, so they don't necessarily need to change the curriculum. They're just bringing in this program that's considered a pleasure-based sexual education. I go into it in more details in the video, basically, which deems if it brings you pleasure, it's okay. Nothing's off limit. And it goes right in line with NAMBLA and pedophilia, right? If it's pleasurable for the child, then it's not wrong. It's, yeah. It's, and the, I just going to add from my personal experience, what makes that whole thing so much more worse. There's different kinds of pedophiles and sexual predators. There's some that will force their way, install fear, sadistic, install pain. There's those kinds. And then there's another kind, which a lot of the ones that fit pedophilia, which have a physical attraction to pre or post pubescent children, those ones, it'll be like in their mind, it will be a relationship. So they'll actually play on the fact that a child's body can experience pleasure. So their way of manipulating the child is they'll slowly introduce that. And so that whole mindset that if it's pleasurable, it's good, is the same mindset that's used to groom and go from doing minimal things to the child to full on thing. And they actually go to the point, the grooming process is actually, they go to the point of making the child believe it was their idea, a lot of them. Wow. So the, and they'll even justify that. I remember watching interviews of child sex offenders, and they were saying, well, the child wanted it. The child got closer to me. Yeah. And just these, that mindset is so sick and perverted. And then you bring that into the school. So this is the new sex education. They want to retrain children into thinking if it feels good for your body, it's okay. But we know deep down in our soul that that's not true.
Right. Yeah.
We know that sometimes the things that the flesh desires, the soul doesn't. Yeah. And it really damages the soul. And I use it, sorry, I'm going to go a little bit deep here for your listeners, but I use it as an example of what makes us humans different than the animal kingdom. In the animal kingdom, it's free for all. You can murder, you can have sex with your, like you can have a dog as soon as the child, his own puppy gets 6 months old, the dog, the father will father that dog. It's not okay. It's normal in the animal kingdom. However, we know deep into our core and soul that is wrong. And anyone who pushes the ideology that we have no soul, that God is not real, what is stopping them from going to the same level that we are just animals?
Yeah.
That's what separates us. God.
Exactly. There, we are made in the image of God. Humankind is created in the image of God. Male and female, he created them. And we are unlike any other created being. You know, we love dogs, we love cats, and, you know, fascinated with the animal world, but we are something different. We are made
we in are.
God. We have a divine spark in us of the what God desires us to be followers of him. And he asks of us things that puts, you know, demands on us, righteous demands that he doesn't put on the animal kingdom, right?
Exactly. And it to me, it just even proves furthermore the existence of God and Jesus. And when we deviate from that, we feel it in our spirit. We really do. And I think anyone who chooses not to recognize that, they know deep inside,
No.
even though they're denying it, they know deep inside that what they're doing is wrong. And I don't think it's just a societal thing. I think it's a deep in our core. Like I was 8 years old, around 8 years old when it started. I knew nothing of sex. I was 8 years old. I wouldn't have known anything that was good or bad at that point in time. But I knew in my spirit that it was wrong.
Yeah.
I could feel it in my gut. So yeah, it's sorry, this might be too deep for your show,
Well,
but
it's very it moves a person on a very deep level. Obviously, it moved you to become an RCMP officer, and now a mama bear or a mother of four children, and you're looking after them, and you're speaking out to protect them and the other children of our country from experiencing what you experienced. And thank you for doing that. Thank you for taking up that very important righteous cause. Just in order to keep the program from going too long, I have so much more I would like to ask you, but two things. One is you mentioned in your video that you just produced that you mentioned the movie The Sound of Freedom. And of
Yes.
course, it's amazing that so many on the left-wing media is attacking this important movie, which is to protect children, right? And yet the leftists, they see somehow it's gnawing away at their self-righteous concept of sexuality, right? So anyway, it's a great movie, and we can promote it here. I'm sure that it's going to have a profound impact on those who allow it to touch them at an inner a deep level. And
And I just want to add a bit to
yeah.
that movie. So when I was trained to profile sex offenders, this was in 2016, we actually spoke about those rescue missions. And if I'm not mistaken, we actually spoke about that specific one and we saw footage,
Okay.
real life footage of it. So I know that story to be a true story. It's not made up, no matter how much the left want to attack it. That is happening in the world. And the when they say that the number one consumers of child trafficking are from North America, that's not a lie.
No.
That is true. So we have to ask ourselves, what are we doing wrong as a society where we're breeding these types of consumers?
Yeah.
And I remember even one of the sessions that we were talking about, we saw like a rescue mission that they had gone, I think it was in Indonesia, into this house, and there was little children there, and they ended up closing down that house, that and they rescued those children. But another house will just open up 1 kilometer down the road, they said, within a day or two. And the parents are so poor there that they'll sell their children to these traffickers. Like that, like they'll find other children. They don't necessarily even need to steal children. The society is so poor. So if we want to fix this problem, there's two things we need to do. We need to create a society where we don't have people so poor to survive that they feel the need to sell their children, one of them. And secondly, we need to create a society where we're not breeding these consumers.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the answer is, but I sure know that Sound of Freedom is a good start. I
Yeah.
think it made everyone really aware that we still have a slavery problem in the world, worse than we've ever had. Actually, that's one of the things in the movie. We have more people enslaved into human trafficking now and child sex slavery than than there's ever been slaves in the world. And you have people talk about the past and the history and stuff, but nobody wants to address, like, let's stop focusing on the history right now. Let's focus at the real problem that we're ignoring.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I love about that movie. It opened the eyes of people who just didn't know.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. And the last thing I want to ask you before we part for this episode, you have a couple more. Well, first of all, you have this one video that is available now, and it's at your YouTube channel. Do you want to give the folks the address for that?
Yeah. So if you search the Nadine Ness Show, it should come up. I've also posted it on Unified Grassroots. So if you're on Facebook, you can search Unified Grassroots and you'll find our group. You'll see I've posted it there. It's also on my Twitter profile. I've pinned it to my Twitter profile until the next one comes out. And that is, my handle is at Nadine G Ness, G as in golf, Ness. Yeah. And you can find it there. And we're going to post it to Rumble too. It's such a huge video data to load. It takes like several hours. I just haven't gotten to posting it on Rumble yet.
Well, I sure appreciate what you are doing and the different ways that you are getting this important message out. You have quite a following on those various social media channels, and you're using it for the good of the children of this country, and we appreciate that. And we will be posting a link to your recent video that you put out.
Mm-hmm.
We will post a direct link to that in the show notes, and we encourage folks to find you on YouTube at the Nadine Ness Show and the other places that you mentioned. Follow her, and you have two coming out shortly or soon in the future. One would be about sexual sin within the church, within the church community, I guess, individuals. And the other one will be on how parents can best protect their children from sexual abuse. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, the other one will be a deep dive into queer theory and SOGI as well. So okay. The program that you guys already have in BC. So I'm gonna deep dive into that, the good and the bad, and queer theory as well. I touched a little bit in the first video, but that video could have been 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna need to do more, and then each subject I'm gonna go more in depth. And there's another one that I'm gonna do on Aaron Marin's law, which is sorry, I hadn't told you about that, Rod, but it's legislation that's been passed in the states and in many states, both on the Democratic and the
Republican.
Sorry, I was having a brain fart there. Both have passed it, and it's policy that it's education, mandated education in the school system that helps prevent and detect child sexual abuse. So it's not a sexualization of children. It just teaches things like consent, what is like good touch, bad touch, but it doesn't go into sexualizing at all. And is very much age appropriate. You start it very young. So it's not out of nowhere and make anyone feel uncomfortable. So I think that would be a very necessary thing moving forward as well in Canada to implement. We don't have anything like that in Canada, and I'd really like to see something like that implemented, legislation, especially like I'll start lobbying to have it implemented in Saskatchewan, and hopefully it'll spread to the other provinces as well. So, and just so anyone know, Erin Marin was a victim of child sexual abuse, and she's also a Christian, and she developed this program that would kind of fit all faith, all people in that way. So I think it'd be a really good thing.
Excellent. Thank you so very much for taking the time away from your family. I know that's precious time for you, But we appreciate you sharing this with us, and we hope folks will go and watch the video you've produced and the other ones that are on their way. Thank your husband for looking after the children so that you can spend this time with our audience. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. God bless you.
God bless you.